when the world is crap and you've got the blues, just take a break from all that horrible news for something crazy, amazingly clever and never half-assed.
Except when it is.
Yes, it's the Randy Rainbow Podcast. This song is almost over, girl, so wipe your tears. You're in for a treat and feast your ears on this remarkable feat. Yes, it's a famous celebrity finally podcast.
Hi, everybody, and welcome to the Randy Rainbow Podcast. I am your host, Susan Sarandon. I am in my studio with my fabulous team. The lovely Rebecca is here. Hi, Rebecca.
Hi, Randy.
So what's doing? What's new since last I saw you?
Well, this happened a little bit ago because our recording schedule is a little wonky, but you were nominated for a Grammy.
What? I know.
Tell me about it. We haven't talked about it.
Can you? Thank you for bringing it up. I thought you'd never mention it. My God, it's like pulling teeth to get a little compliment out of you. No, I'm kidding. Thank you. I can't get over it. I cannot believe it. I purposely did not want to know. I know that we submitted, my record label submitted. Obviously, they needed to get my okay. And of course, I said yes, but I did not know when they would announce. I didn't know what would happen. And it was like one of those things that like obnoxious people say when they got nominated for things. My publicist called me and gave me the news, and I was totally blindsided and elated. But it could not have happened more perfectly in that my category was read by Machine Gun Kelly, which when you think of Randy Rainbow, you think Machine Gun Kelly.
Oh, yeah, right away.
Oh, it was perfect. It was Machine Gun Kelly in all his glory, fully hungover, and just everything you could wish for.
What a funny category for him to be announcing.
Well, you know, he's very funny. He's my favorite comedian.
The album is up for Best Comedy Album of the Year. And the album is called A Little Brains, A Little Talent. If you don't have it already, you can get it anywhere music is sold or streamed.
That was the other kind of thing that I liked a little bit, was the fact that Machine Gun Kelly read the title of a show tune from Damn Yankees, which is what that song is.
That's
what I named my album after. How random is that?
Yeah. That's good, kind of fun.
Yeah. And this is the first time, well, now I sound obnoxious, but I have been nominated for 4 Creative Arts Emmys, which is thrilling. And you go and, you know, it's jam-packed with stars and all of that. But this is the first time that I'll actually be at the actual, like, because the Creative Arts Emmys are usually the night before or the week before the Emmys. Now I'm going to actually be there, like, at the same time as Beyonce, right? Now, I'm told that they may or may not read this category during the show. Sometimes they do, and sometimes it's, like, in the pre-show, and then they announce it during the commercial break. I don't know.
I want to hear every single category. Same for the Tonys. You know, every award show, I want to see all of the winners.
Oh, you do?
I'll be there all night. I don't mind.
Well, last year, I think they announced, like, 12 categories at the Grammy, so good luck with that.
Okay.
Well, maybe they should just announce my category.
Yeah.
And then Beyonce can do, like, the after party.
Yeah, during the commercial or something.
Yeah.
Yeah.
This is a very prestigious category, and I'm sharing it with some, you know, like it or not, some giants of comedy. I know that this year it happens to be a very controversial category.
It is, yeah. This is a category with Dave Chappelle, Jim Gaffigan, Louis C.K., and Patton Oswalt.
I'm the only one singing show tunes in the category. Let's say that.
That should be an automatic win.
Yeah. So, frankly, I mean, you know, as far as this category goes, I'm like the Donna Reed of the best comedy album category. It's a pretty safe bet if you don't want to tick anyone off. But I'm over the moon. I don't know what I'm going to wear, who I'm going to bring. It's going to be exciting.
So who's on the show today?
Well, one of my favorite leading men of the Broadway stage, the one and only Gavin Creel.
Yeah, he'll be here in person.
He's going to be here. I love him so much. Well, Riley, you love Gavin Creel too.
I love Gavin Creel.
You're like obsessed with him. You kind of like have a thing for him, I would say.
Yeah, well, I would say definitely my 16-year-old self was obsessed with him.
That's so funny. Oh, my God. So I'm trying to think, like, who he is to you, because, Riley, you're a couple of years younger than I am. Shut up. But when I first met Gavin Creel was in 2002, when he was in Thoroughly Modern Millie. You were 2 years old. Or no, you were—
Three.
You were three.
Yeah.
That's so depressing. Get out. So, like, who is an equivalent to me?
Oh, that's interesting.
You know, like Broadway idol type. People who would be my Gavin Creel to Riley's. Gavin Creel. You know what I'm saying? I don't know.
Yeah.
I can't do the math. Because he's like still a young, he's like a young contemporary man. So he's not like when I was a kid, I was obsessed with people who are, you know, much older artists and dead. You know, I love Judy Garland and like all of that. So
I think it's the Bernadette Peters and her contemporaries. I think it's Patti LuPone. You know, it's like the stars that were stars before we were really growing up, like that were stars when we were children.
I guess so. Well, anyway, he'll be here soon enough. Riley, keep it together. This is my interview. And I'm excited because I love him very much. So let's hurry up and do it.
It's the Randy Rainbow Podcast. Let's answer the phone.
Pick up.
Hi, Randy. It's Pete from Princeton. I think I'm able to list all of your favorite Broadway divas. But do you have a favorite Broadway Devo?
Hi, Pete from Princeton. Good question, because as you know, I do tend to favor my Broadway divas. And that's not fair, because there are a lot of Devos that I love and adore and have for a long time. You know, I think back, we were just having this conversation, but I think back to my high school days and the people who were on my wall were Billy Porter, Sam Harris, not the neuroscientist and philosopher, but the Broadway star who I knew from the 1994 cast of Grease, where I knew Billy first, and The Life. Oh, The Life was good. Norm Lewis, who I happened to sing a duet with on my Christmas album, available now wherever music is sold or streamed. Alan Cumming, who I also sing a duet with on my Christmas album. And, well, funny you should ask, because our guest today is Gavin Creel, and he's one of my all-time favorite Broadway leading men. So, yeah, I love the boys.
Hi, Randy. This is Josh from San Francisco. Longtime listener, first-time caller. As a fellow single gay man who lives alone with a cat, I have a very important question. Now, I've always made up silly lyrics for show tunes and TV show theme songs to sing to my cat, kind of like you do, but without the talent. So my question is, when it's just you and Tippy at home together, what do you sing to her? Do you try out new material, or do you just sing about how perfectly adorable she is? Either way, I'm glad you have a cat to sing to again. Okay, that's it. Congratulations on your podcast, and I hope you get some good dates out of it. Bye.
Josh, you sound like my perfect man. Rebecca, can we relocate this show to San Francisco?
No, but we might be able to bring Josh here. Josh, get in touch.
Josh, reach out. He's a cat person, very sweet and sensitive, show tune person, sings to the cat. He's like an old cat lady like me.
Does cross off a lot of the boxes, doesn't he?
I love him. And he's so sweet. Josh, I'm in love with you. I do sing to my cat. I wish I could say she was a fan, but I find that she when I start singing, or even when I, like, if I'm recording, because I do all that in my apartment, or if I'm warming up before a show, she does start to complain. She runs up and to see, you know, what's wrong, because she's not a fan. And then inevitably, if I have to keep singing, she will just, like, play dead. Like, she'll go to sleep because she just needs to escape. But I do sing to her constantly because I'm always singing around the house. I find that she likes anything from the musical Cats.
Hey, Randy. This is David. I'm a blind guy. And I was wondering if you could describe what you look like and if you would consider ever dating a blind guy.
David, thank you for calling. Please send in your information because you sound adorable. And yes, of course, I would be open to dating a blind man just like yourself. To answer your question, I would say I am extremely tall and muscular. I guess I would say I'm intimidatingly attractive. Rebecca, would you agree?
David, for transparency's sake.
Okay, that's fine. Thank you, Rebecca. We're all out of time. If you'd like to leave me a message with a question, comment, or if you're looking for some dating advice yourself, perhaps I can be of service. Probably not, but let's give it a shot. Go to the show notes and leave me a message by clicking the link.
It's the Randy Rainbow Podcast, Variety Show.
And now a brief word from our sponsor. Hello, friends. Randy Rainbow here, and nobody knows the entertainment industry like a superstar such as myself. But where do you go if you need to cast talent outside of the mainstream liberal deep state media machine? Make the right move and give Right of Central Casting a call. At Right of Central Casting, we've got an extensive talent database of washed-up Republican political figures ready for all your casting needs. Looking to appear balanced and add a zany alt-right perspective on your liberal news network? We've got Rick Santorum ready to go. Or how about a spokesman for those late-night infomercials selling shitty John Wayne commemorative plates? We represent both Mike Huckabee and Chris Christie. And trust us, they're both beyond desperate to feel useful. Don't break the bank calling in Lauren Boebert to speak at your next rally when we've got the original model, Sarah Palin, literally begging for something to do. We've also got Mike Pence, Glenn Beck, Jeb Bush, Bill O'Reilly, Paul Ryan. The shit list goes on. Right of Central Casting is the ideal casting network for your network, corporate event, or holiday party. Our client, Rick Perry, is available and standing by in East Texas just drinking beer and mindlessly throwing rocks at ants. And don't do the same old boring fake superhero shtick at your child's next birthday party. Instead of fake Spider-Man, why not book the real Sean Spicer? He's literally willing to let your kids throw clumps of dirt at him for a mention on Truth Social and half a ham sandwich. So what are you waiting for? Ride the red wave on over to rightofcentralcasting.com and start booking today.
That was really a kick, but enough of that skit. Time to drop all the shit now. So let's cut the shit. I think I'm fabulous, Kiki, with someone I love would be bad. It's time for a guest.
My guest today is an uber-talented Broadway darling and superstar who has performed in a few small skits, such as Waitress, Hair, The Book of Mormon, Hello, Dolly, which earned him a Tony Award, and most recently, Into the Woods. If that weren't enough, he is also the proud owner of one of the world's most beautiful heads of hair. Please welcome Gavin Creel. You're my first in-studio person, so I've never done this
before. You haven't?
No. I'm nervous.
My God.
Don't be
the
gentle.
Funniest, greatest. I'm not nervous at all.
You're not?
No, because you're in charge.
Oh, okay. Shit. Now we're really in trouble. Well, welcome to Lindsey Graham's closet. That's where we broadcast from. And I'm so thrilled to be with you because I have loved you for such a long time.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Now I have to start by addressing the elephant in the room, which is Riley, who's on our. Yeah, I'm going right there, Riley. Because I thought I was going to be the biggest Gavin Creel fan in the room, but I'm being upstaged as usual by Riley.
No
who,
way.
I'll let you tell the story, Riley, her 16th birthday, her gift, only thing she wanted was to see you in Book of Mormon at the Pantages.
No way. No,
and you made her dreams come true.
Yes.
Go.
For my 16th birthday, my best friend Avery gave me a note that had the Book of Mormon on it. And she gave me an Apple iTunes gift card to download the cast album. And we listened to it nonstop and then saw you at Book of Mormon. When it ended, we sobbed. Aww. And then we stage doored and you signed my playbill that's still in my childhood bedroom.
No way. Riley, yeah. You made my day.
I'm so glad.
Was that nice? I was nice to you.
Oh, so nice.
No, she's like, you are a total dick.
No, we were literally shaking. You were so kind.
You don't do social media so much.
Not really, no.
I so admire and envy that about you. And I want to get
anxiety. Yeah, we can talk about it.
That's a choice that you made. Tell me when.
Was it 2008 when everybody started joining Facebook? I guess. I was in London doing Mary Poppins at the time, and I got on Facebook and there's that rush at the beginning. I don't know if you had it, where I was like, oh, this is really fun. Yeah. It's kind of like, it's the ego boost. It's like a dopamine hit of attention.
Hello.
Yeah. But then
I got over that. I still have it.
Yeah.
It's hope. Terrible addiction now it's turned into now. It's for everybody.
If you're funny and you're brilliant, like you are, it's fine. You're putting out, to me, it's like content. I think social media, like, in the right hands is amazing.
Yeah.
People who know how to do it and also are able to have a balance. I couldn't have balance. I was like, I was just anxious all the time and I have to do it a certain way or people are going to be, they're going to criticize me and I don't want to be criticized by people I don't have any interaction with. I'll be criticized by people. I mean, you can criticize me all you want on this.
Yeah. But I wouldn't. But I mean, that is.
I wish
that,
you would. I hope that paper. This is like all. Yeah, this is just a criticism.
This is a roast.
Why did you do this?
Listen.
What is up with that outfit?
No, but that is social media. I mean, that's you've just described it, and yet we all just endure for some reason. I have a love hate relationship with it because it's of look at all it's given me. but also it's you have to kind of. you know, set up boundaries, and mm-hmm. and because it couldn't just
that's a good
eat
way
you
to
up
put
alive.
It. Boundaries. There was this great quote I heard in the pandemic. It was, "Compassion without boundaries leads to self-betrayal." It doesn't really have anything to do with what you just
nothing
said.
Nothing at
I just
all,
like,
but that's all right. I like it anyway. I'm going to write it down.
Yeah,
please. Wait, compassion. Say it again.
Compassion without boundaries leads to self-betrayal.
So that means you're, so in other words.
I want to do, oh, you look like you're having a hard time. I want to.
Codependence.
They'll just take and take and take.
Yeah.
People, situations, anything.
Yeah. Are you a codependent kind of person? Are you an empath?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So you can be,
I
that can
probably,
be dangerous.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think social media sort of falls into that too.
Absolutely.
Like where you read a letter from somebody that's having a tough time and you're like, well, maybe, see, can I help you? It's like. I have to help my friends first.
Yeah.
They're asking for help. And I'm like, I'm sorry, I got to help this person.
Oh, I know. It's not, we're not supposed to be waking up and going to bed with strangers every day. Well,
if you want to be, I applaud it. I celebrate it. No shame.
I should have specified what I meant by that. I don't, we're very sex positive on the show. Now, back to you and your fandom. we were trying to figure this out because I, of course, came to know you when you were in Thoroughly Modern Millie. That was the first show I saw when I moved to New York.
Do you know how long that was?
20 years ago.
It was 2002.
20 years ago.
Isn't that insane?
Yeah, because Riley, your big fan over there, was 3 years old.
Wait, no.
Yes. Uh-huh. I know, she's fired. She made me feel old. She's off the show. Here's what I'm getting at. I feel like once you came on the scene, after that, every guy on Broadway started to sound like Gavin Creel. Is that what you tell people?
No.
Or do you? No, I know because you're very modest and all that. But do you, do you feel the kind of impact or inspiration you've had on those that came after you?
Yes.
You must.
Yeah, I do. Because I love to teach, right? Yeah. And it's like, I'll meet the students and they'll be like, let's do it. Let's figure this out. Let's do it. We would do the class. And afterwards, they're like, I've been trying to sound like you for years. And I listened to recordings of you. And that's like the greatest compliment you can get. Just knowing that someone, I don't know, I did it with Robert Westenberg, who's, I'm the wolf and the prince now. And that was Robert Westenberg and his voice and Greg Edelman. And
yeah, I was going to say, who are your Gavin Creels?
The male, because mostly it's women. I'm obsessed with the women.
Hello.
Yeah. I mean, duh.
Look at my barber book right behind you.
No. Oh,
yes.
The beauty.
Are you a barber person?
I came to barber late. I'm patty all day long.
Okay, I'm not going to fault you for that.
Yeah, it's all patty.
We're friends. I wrote a book, Gavin. There's a chapter in it called Patty Fucking Lapone, and I tell the story about how she first came to my apartment and we sang together and we did a whole thing.
Is that the recording that I would have seen during?
To the tune of if Mama Was Married, we did a parody. Yes, it's.
I watched that 900,000 times. Oh my God, it was the best.
God, thank you.
Yeah, well, it was the best.
Well, we're friends now. She's in my phone as Patty Fucking Lapone. That's how
you
she's
did,
listed. Yeah,
as you should.
So Patty was a big one for you.
Yeah, yeah. She Sutton Foster and I bonded during Millie.
Yeah.
Over the I've talked about this ad nauseum, but I will talk it to the day I'm die. I'm Please. Dead. Is when she did. Do you remember the Sondheim celebration at Carnegie Hall?
That I bonded with Sutton Foster when I first met her. Although she doesn't remember it. But
no,
over that was my introduction, being alive, Sondheim at Carnegie Hall. And I said, what the fuck is this? And it made me gay.
Yeah, it made me gay. It made me go into musical theater.
Yeah.
Sutton and I in tech were like, that 2 minutes and 34 seconds or whatever that is, that one song. I'm like, I could tell Paul Gimignani conducting behind her, turning in the last bit. To wait till she puts her arm down to do the cutoff of the orchestra. Oh my God, those culottes.
Heavenly.
What was that pantsuit she was wearing?
That was
shoulder
like
shoulder pads.
Yes. Oh. Oh my God. Well, what was that? I mean, it was early 90s,
91,
I guess.
91.
Yeah.
Oh my God. And it was directed by Scott Ellis, who directed She Loves Me that I was in.
Okay.
And Susan Stroman did the choreography.
Oh, so you've since recounted this, how special this.
I talked about it with him.
Yeah.
I've never worked with Susan Stroman, but.
Yeah. What does he have to say about it? Did he know when he was there that something special was happening to gay men across the country?
There was like rainbows just popping off everywhere.
Yes.
Yeah. It was just, I love that you love that too.
That's it. It's in the book. I'm not kidding you. Yeah, that was the moment for me.
That was it.
Yeah. So Patti LuPone, who else?
You know, male singers, I'm in the show with him now. I never don't think it's amazing as Brian D'Arcy James. I remember seeing him the same year as Millie in Sweet Smell of Success and watching him stand in the center of that stage with that, you know, that sound he makes that's so Brian D'Arcy James. It's just that placement. And I love him. And he's like the most lovely person.
Yeah.
And then it's the women. It's
Patty.
I'm trying Patty.
Bernadette.
Yeah. I'm trying to think of the people who I like, the Suttons and the Audras and Adina and Stephanie Block and just, we have such great, powerful, beautiful women in our industry who are unique and and themselves. And I mean that separately, like they're unique to us, but in themselves, they sort of like stay in their lane and do what they do.
Yeah.
Like Audra had every reason to try to become somebody else because of the pressure she probably felt when she first came to the city and wanting to try to fit into a mostly white industry. And she just said, she's gave the middle finger to Juilliard and came to Broadway and carved her own lane. And she's the queen of our industry.
Absolutely. Well, there's something that's so, that resonates with people when people are just so, you know, defiantly themselves.
Yeah.
It permeates.
Yeah.
You
yeah.
see, like, and she's such an original, you know, that's why, that's what the people
authenticity, right? It's like, it's what we react to the most. I think whenever I teach, I try to say, I want you to be believable, authentic, and vulnerable. Those are like the three things: honest, authentic, and vulnerable, and then you will be believable.
Yeah.
But if you can access those three things, like an honesty of what's going on in the situation, what's going on with you at that moment, melding the two, finding a way to kind of peel back your chest and expose your heart or whatever, mm-hmm. the good, the bad, the ugly, all of it. And then to just try to be as authentically you as the character and as yourself as you can.
That's probably the best direction or note you could give anybody, because so many people are interested in what they sound like and how they make the note sound. But really,
and they're great.
And that's great, but you have to know that. And then
the
authenticity, the you know, exposing your heart that way, that's what really reaches people.
Yeah. Yes. That's it. That's what actually, and we don't really realize why it's getting in. Like Patty wasn't just, yeah, great voice or whatever. But there was something about
in
that moment.
She was showing us her vagina, and I don't think she will mind me saying that. And that
I'm sure she'd love it.
Yeah,
she I don't know her as well as you do, but
well, we haven't gotten that far yet in our relationship. But I think she would know what I'm saying. And just exposing yourself that much, just and you, the person doesn't know why they're
feeling
what they're feeling. For instance, if I like parody a song that no one has ever fucking heard of. Mm-hmm. And people will be, you know, if I consult with someone, they're like, no one's going to know that song. You should do something that's a little more mainstream. I'm like, no, I love this song and I want to do it. And inevitably it works because I love what I'm doing and it that reaches mm-hmm. people. Mm-hmm. So let's talk Into the Woods a little bit because you're doing it now.
Yes.
What is your, so you've kind of already answered this, but what is your relationship with Into the Woods before?
When I grew up, it was that CD.
Yeah.
I got it at the library. It was around the same time. I want to say I got like City of Angels and Mystery of Edwin Drood, mm-hmm. right?
Betty.
I think Into the Woods was in there, but I got to see that PBS, the PBS airing that we all fell in love with.
Oh my God.
That I watched again, Randy.
I just watched it 2 days ago.
You did not?
Yeah.
It's remarkable, isn't it?
Yeah. How much did we learn just from watching that, having access to that? I'm so grateful that they recorded that. First of all, everything, so much about comedic timing.
Yeah.
You know, I learned from watching that over and over again.
Watching Joanna Gleason be completely human and also brilliantly timed. Hilarious.
Yeah.
And then when I watched it again, I remember thinking like, you have those performances, Joanna or Bernadette, even Chip Zion in his own like, beautifully charming and neurotic way, the way he played the baker. But then when you watch all of them, you watch the economy and brilliance that they all do, even the steward and Rapunzel was so, or Rapunzel's mom, when she's in the tree and the grandmother, like they're all really funny.
Yeah.
A little bit of box of weirdos, all like these character actors all lined up. Jack was so, first of all, I had such a crush on him.
Oh my God.
He was so cute.
Absolutely. Ben Ryan.
Yes, Ben Ryan. That's right. But he was like, I didn't realize how brilliantly daffy he was.
Yeah.
Like he was like, mother, I just found them all so funny.
Yeah.
But I think the reason why our production is having such a response is because we've lived with it for this long. Mm. I don't think they had this kind of success when it first came out, did they?
I don't know. That's a good question.
I think it was successful, but Sondheim on first go around is usually like the mainstream member that I can't hum it. I don't know what it is. I'll go to the Lloyd Webber show. And we're like,
well, now it has mainstream success. It was a Disney movie. So
yeah.
That plays into it.
Yeah. And I think just time living with the score and knowing the songs. And
it is funny. I never see a production of Into the Woods without thinking everyone on this stage grew up with that PBS thing, which must be challenging because you have to try not to imitate everything. Because that's so ingrained in my brain. Was that a challenge at all for you?
The only thing that was ingrained in my brain was the wolf costume.
With the penis.
Louise.
That was good. That also,
it was Patti LuPone's performance and that wolf.
And Robert Westenberg's, wolf costume. That's what made us gay.
I mean, the wolf costume at least made me go to the eagle. I don't know.
Yeah. Something. That was good. They've never been anatomically correct with that costume. That was very brave for the day, right? And they've never done it again.
My big thing, I'm not telling my secrets or anything, but I said to Lear, and Lear said it back to me, under no circumstances am I going to play anything predatory in 2022.
Oh, interesting.
I'm not getting on stage and be like, because already Hello Little Girl is just so vile and weird.
Right.
And they really leaned into it. Obviously, he was like basically naked with a penis.
Right.
And I think also at the time, I think, and I'm talking for Lapine and Sondheim, but I think they were excited about subverting these, like making them adult.
Right.
We know what it is now.
Yes.
We don't need to put a hat on a hat in that way. But I think they needed to do that to say, you're not coming to, you can pay for the Broadway show. Don't worry about it. It's going to be, it's not a children's show. It's going to be dark and deep. And that's what we were hungry for. We want No One Is Alone. We want to see the giant ruin things and come out of it. But I just was like, there's no chance I'm getting on that stage in 2022 and any sexual.
Interesting.
So we had really fun, like had these really weird skinny pants and big fur coat and a cane. And the cane is only there because Andrea Hood, who did the costumes, had a cane in the sketch. And I was like, should I have a cane? They're like, oh, there's one over there. Go get it. And I just started building stuff around it. But it was like a dandy. And it's just like, well, hello.
Yeah.
And it's more, I suppose you could call it more cartoony. But I felt really strongly. I did not want to come on stage and be
predatory.
No.
That's interesting.
Not now.
Yeah.
There's already enough weird stuff that's still
Well, you
in
can
the script.
Really go, full disclosure, I haven't seen it yet. I cannot wait.
Yeah, come by.
Well, this is also a very diverse cast.
Yes.
Which I think historically, this is probably the most diverse cast of the show now.
I hope, and I hope it's not the last. You know? What's amazing is, I think we have to be careful now about colorblind casting, because that's color conscious casting is what they try to say now. Like to be aware of, like to be colorblind is to ignore what it is to be a different race or a different ethnicity or whatever.
And interesting.
To be color conscious is to be aware of all the things that brings and honor them, celebrate them, understanding. What works with Into the Woods, I think, is that you can't, it's easier because it's all fantasy. So you can have Anne Harada is the mother, and Cole Tom. Anne Harada is AAPI, and Cole is a black man, and the Milky White is an Asian man who's working, but a man working a female cow.
Like, was that on purpose?
Well, I don't know. You know what I was thinking is like it would have, because Milky White is a woman, but
yeah.
I don't know why I always think all cows are boys just because it was so big or whatever. I don't know. It's so stupid.
Sometimes I fear you are touched.
Touched. Exactly.
Got it.
But there's like, I thought, wouldn't it be interesting if it was a woman? Because when you say she, you see the puppeteer. Thank God it's Kennedy Kanagawa because he's just the most delightful and so good at it and never done puppetry work.
Ever. Oh, really?
Yeah. He's made for it. I mean, he's an amazing actor and beautiful singer and everything, but oh my God, what he does is just stunning. He steals the show every night.
Oh God.
He's amazing.
I can't wait to see it.
Yeah, I think because it's fantasy and fairy tale, you can have a beautiful mixed cast of all different races, ethnicities, shapes, sizes, ages, and it works. But I don't know. I hope we can keep doing that kind of thing with, especially the classics, which were only ever written with one whiteness in mind. Mm-hmm. And it's like, I'm like, let's see us break all these open. And what new stories can we tell?
I feel like we're on the right track.
I hope so. Yeah.
You do miscast all the time for Broadway Cares.
Aaron Tveit and I have done a...
I know. That was a big thing for Riley in high school.
We just did, during the pandemic, we did... it was from Jekyll and Hyde. I didn't know it. It was his first Broadway show. Yes, that. Okay. We did like a little silly video split screen thing because we were both filming American Horror Stories, a couple episodes. We were both on this just beginning of the series. And we were like, should we do it again? Do it on Zoom? And I think probably every like 5 years, we'll do another one.
Is there a part that would be your dream to gender bend?
I don't know.
Don't lie. You know you have a whole
list. I don't. People always ask, like, what's the role you want to play?
Yeah.
And I always say something new. I want to do something new. I've been so lucky to do a lot of stuff.
That's true.
But it's mostly revivals. Yeah. I've replaced in Waitress and Mary Poppins. And I feel like what other new thing have I done? I've done 8 Broadway shows and I can't remember all of it right now. Oh,
excuse me.
I can't remember.
Yeah, but you have. You've played a lot of, you know, you've kind of done those traditional roles.
Yeah.
You've kind of lived your dreams in that department. Yeah. Well, we kind of touched on this a little bit, but I have a diva speed round.
Come on, let's do it.
That you have worked with.
Okay. Oh, yes.
So I will say the name of the diva and then you just give me the first thing that comes to mind.
You got it.
Only negative things, please.
Okay, yeah, for sure.
Just kidding. Sutton Foster.
Sutton Foster and I just had dinner a few nights ago and we haven't seen each other in like years. And it was the best. And I would say the biggest thing that sticks with me is history. Like we hadn't seen each other and we sat down at Joe Allen, which I never go to. And I was like, oh, the food's good and it's cozy and it's legendary.
I love
Joe Allen. I sat down and she goes, hey. And I went, 20 years just went. And then we just sat there and talked about our lives. Didn't talk about the business at all. We just talked about what was going on in each other's lives and our hearts. And that's just history. You know those friends, that's not catching up. That's just.
Yeah. They're in your DNA. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. That's her.
Certainly with her, you have such a special, important history.
The very first. And did you know when she won her Tony 15 years ago? Oh, no. 15 years. No. 20. 20 years ago. She won. Yes. My God. That's right. She won her Tony 20 years ago. And 15 years prior to the day I got my Tony Award, she won hers and she handed me mine. She was presenting the category with Scott Bakula, Quantum Leap.
Yeah.
Thank you. But they were there and I couldn't believe it. I walked on stage and I was like, oh my God, it's you. And she told me she was presenting my category the night before. She came to see the show and she was like, I have to tell you something. I'm presenting your category. And I was like, if it's not my name, just say it anyway. It was my name. I got that.
But she probably would have. Did that give you like a little bit of a butterfly?
I'm not going to lie. A tiny part of it.
Yeah.
Me. Yeah.
They had Bernadette Peters announce my category when I got nominated for an Emmy for the third time. Lost every time to James Corden. I don't want to talk about it. But they had Bernadette Peters do it. And I'm like,
oh my God.
They did this for me.
This is it.
I lost. Okay. So Sutton Foster, Sarah Bareilles.
Well, I mean, she's my heart. Like, she's one of my best friends in the whole world.
I just adore her.
She's amazing.
Yeah.
I think she, Adele, and Beyonce are the three greatest pop voices in pop music right now. That's just my opinion.
Yeah.
I think she has like one of the most incredible musical souls. And it just comes out of here.
Yes.
Yeah.
It's a gift from above what she has.
Beyond. Yeah. Isn't it?
Absolutely. And it's just to hear her heals you in some way.
Yeah.
Every time she opens.
Yes.
I love her.
It's like soothing and also inspiring. And the music that she's writing now, she doesn't really write songs that aren't about what needs to be said. And I find that really, I don't know, I find that really admirable. You know, she inspires me as a writer to look and try to find things, even if they're inane. I like write inane stuff, but make it about something.
Yeah.
And she's doing that. I just love her. And she has the cutest dog alive.
Oh, does she?
Oh my God, Louie is the greatest.
Do you have pets?
No, my dog died during the pandemic.
I'm sorry to hear that.
Next question.
My cat died during the pandemic. No. It's in the book. Pick up a copy.
Oh, we'll give you one on the way out. Sorry.
I know, but I wrote a whole chapter about it because, I think that you would like, even if you listen to a little bit of it, people who went through that experience, it's a very unique, especially awful experience to have had that.
Yeah.
Because I didn't get to say goodbye to him. I had to put him in the carrier and have someone take him away. They wouldn't let me in.
They wouldn't let you in.
Is that what you had?
No, I paid a lot of money and I said, you're coming to my house. And I put him down in the living room because I was like, I couldn't do it.
Yeah.
I found a friend who said, it's going to cost you a lot of money. I said, I don't care.
Yeah.
I know he has to go down. He's so sick. Yeah. But I was just like, I cannot. Because they were like, you have to drop him off and you can't come in. Screw you.
I didn't even, now I feel bad. I didn't even ask.
I didn't know it because I was saying that they're making me drop him off. And my friend, Zach Quinto.
Oh, I just was with him in Denver.
Were you really?
Yeah, we were at the Matt Shepard Gala.
Oh, amazing.
I love him. I'd never met him before.
He's great.
He's terrific.
Yeah, so talented.
But he told you that you could do that?
He said, just in case you need to know, I have a vet. So if you ever have another cat you need to put down, I'll give you.
Thanks. I look forward to it.
What was her name? His name?
His name was Mushy.
Mushy.
Yeah.
How old was
he? And he was 17.
Yeah.
And he was fit as if, well, he started to decline a little bit because he had, you know, cats at that age get kidney failure. Oh, they start to a lot of time. And, but he was totally fine. And then like the second we locked down, he immediately got sick. I'm like, really? This is happening right now?
When was it? May? April, May, June?
It was April of 2020.
While it was June. I literally looked at him, Randy. I went, everything was terrible for all of us. And then I had a relationship end and this was terrible. And I was like sort of sitting there looking at him alone in my house. I said, thank God for you. You are my salvation. And 6 weeks later, he was dead.
This is okay.
Oh my God. I literally was like, I thought I caused the pandemic. I went into such a really dark place during, I thought, I think this is all happening because of me. Because it's narcissistic and also insane.
But probably true.
I thought, God, I call it God, but God is like, you have to learn how to go inward. You have to learn and deal with some shit in your life. And the only way you're going to deal with it is if I take everything you love away from you.
Oh, God, how awful to do that to yourself.
It's like Joby. It's like Job in the Bible.
I couldn't
make sense of any of it.
Yeah.
That's why I stopped drinking and sugar, because I was having all these nightmares every night and I couldn't sing. I lost my voice for a year and a half. It was bad.
This was all pandemic time.
Yeah, but I wrote a musical during it.
That's right. Is this with the Met?
Walk on through, yeah.
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 How are you? What stage of
we're doing? We're doing an industry presentation. I'm so proud of what I'm writing. Our team is so amazing. We're collaborating with really great people. But it's basically about me. I got invited by the MetLife Arts Department at the museum to take a meeting in January of 2019, and they sat me down and they said, "We'd like you to consider. If we'll give you a membership card and just go at the museum for as long as you need. And then when you come up with an idea for something you could do a performance of, we'll help you produce it at the Grace Rainey Rogers Auditorium, which is a 700-seat theater inside the Met, which I did not know existed because I had never been to the Met before. 20 years in New York and I'd never been.
I think I maybe been once.
That's okay. Yeah.
But I certainly didn't know there's a theater there.
Neither did I. Oh. I didn't know there was anything in
there. So they just sort of commissioned this?
It's like a small little commission that then I took 3 years to do and I spent twice as much as they gave me to be able to produce the concert. But I just called them and I just said, I think I have my idea. My idea is that I have never been to the Met before and I think I'm a fraud and you've given me this assignment. Now I'm going to present my findings. And now it's turned into a story about a guy named Gavin Creel who is in the midlife crisis in this time in his life and is standing on the steps of the Met Museum and has no idea what he's doing here, but he thinks he's going to find the answer inside.
Oh,
over the course of the night, it's sort of an exploration of love and life and art.
Oh, wow. It sounds beautiful. You must have me.
Please come. Please come.
I'm really
excited about it.
That's great.
Yeah.
All right. Back to the ladies.
Okay. Okay. We got next.
Julie Andrews.
Oh, my gosh. I love that you asked about her.
Of course. What do you think?
She just turned, what did she just turn, like 87 or something?
Did she?
Yes. Still nailing it. This is the memory I have of her. That's my favorite. There's two. One is her standing in a snowbank outside the studio in a North Face coat from her chin in a little stocking cap, but this much of her face out, in winter boots in a snowbank by herself in this all the way down to her feet, the coat, going like, oh, go, Eloise. Oh, Eloise. And I look at her and she goes, I've got to get the accent right.
Yeah.
And I was like,
I knew it was phony.
She's because she was playing commoner, like a
Cockney.
Yeah. And she was, she's so beautifully RP and proper and stunningly spoken, well spoken. And I looked at her and she didn't see her at first. And I was like, oh my God, that's Julie Andrews alone in a snowbank,
wow,
mucking around, trying to work out how she was going to perform.
Oh my God, thought, what a special thing to witness.
I thought, and I'm so, I haven't thought, I appreciate you asking me because I haven't thought about that in years. But I went, if she, literally she could come on screen and just make armpit fart noises if she wanted, and we'd be like, yeah, brilliant.
But that was her last concert, I saw. Yeah. And it was wonderful.
Wonderful. Bald. Yeah. Cry.
Please.
Moved. But if she can do that and she can work, like there's no excuse for me to not to.
Right.
And then the other thing is Chicago came out that year. And
Chicago, the movie.
Which, I went and saw when we were in Toronto filming by myself. And her assistant, I can't remember her name, was in the van with me, and she was already on set with her two guys, John and John, the Johns, who did her hair and makeup. And she was all the way at the end of the trailer, and she was sitting facing, like, so let's say that's me way at the other end of the trailer getting ready, and she's sitting looking at the mirror, and John's here and the other John's here, and they're doing her, and I come in, they're doing her face and hair, and I come in and I sit down and I see Julie's down there, and I'm like, because you never know how to strike up a conversation. These people don't need to talk to me.
Please.
She's the queen. And I said, screw it. I said, Julie, I heard you saw Chicago last night. And she proceeded to like arch around, and the Johns had to go, and they continued to get her ready, but she did not lose eye contact with me for the, oh, I thought it was wonderful. Jules and Peggy, Jules Fisher and Peggy Eisenhower did the lighting, and I worked with them on Victor Victoria. And did you love it? Asked me all these questions, never lost eye contact with me. And then once that part of the conversation finished, she goes, so good to talk. And then turned back. Oh. And I thought, she didn't need to talk to me. She didn't need to turn.
Class.
And I just thought, again, learning how these are the biggest people in our industry, there's zero excuse for me to pull any shit.
Yeah.
To act weird to anybody, to treat anybody less than.
Exactly.
When you have Julie Andrews showing you, this is how you treat.
Well, don't you learn that the people who behave any other way are not, don't end up being icons and legends.
Yeah. Yes.
Right?
They burn bright and fast, and then they burn out.
Yeah.
Because nobody wants to hang out with dicks.
Exactly. Yeah. That's why I have no friends. Thanks for coming. All right. I have two more.
Okay.
Stephanie J. Block.
Oh.
She's, my friend.
She's one of my new, like, I did a.
Did you work together before?
No, we did a concert in DC last year, 2021. Mm-hmm. It was the 50th celebration of Kennedy Center. It was really fun. It was like Andrew Rannells and I got to sing You're Nothing Without Me and Corner of the Sky, which I love, just with a full 37-piece orchestra and Rob Berman conducting. And we're all there, and Stephanie was there, and I was like, I love Stephanie Block. And Andrew has obviously worked with her in falsettos. He said, oh, if you ever get to work with her, she's so much fun. We howl.
Yeah.
Yes.
She's funny.
Last night in the show, she's going to hate that I tell the story. This is a moment where I'm kissing her and I go, oh, I shall not forget you. How brave you are to be alone in the woods. And then I kiss her again and I pull away, and then I have this big line where I go, and how alive you've made me feel. And then I exit and it's so overdramatic. Last night, I said, how brave you are to be alone in the woods. And I kiss her and I pulled away and she goes,
she snorted. Because she was laughing?
No, she just inhaled. She was like,
God.
And it was on mic. And I just went,
oh no.
And then I couldn't say the line. The night before, some kid, I said, how brave you are to be alone in the woods. And I'm just about to say, and how alive you've made me feel. This kid goes, why are they kissing? And we just turned to the audience and they laughed. And then they were laughing. And I had that last line. I was like, this is not going to work. So I just went, bye. And I left.
You did it.
I did. I just went, bye.
Really?
And she
can
laughed.
You do that? Can you get away with that?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Oh, that's funny.
Yeah. I mean, I'm sure I'll get in trouble at some point, but.
Oh, anyway. I love that. Yeah. Okay. Last one, Bette Midler.
I mean, I thought she'd be the first one you'd asked about.
Well, that's segueing. Listen, I know what I'm doing. I'm segueing into another question.
You're a pro.
Please.
She, nobody works harder than her.
Yeah.
Her work ethic is fastidious, constant. That's the first thing that really does pop in. She read her script before every single show. It was like she was in a movie.
Yeah.
She was just looking at her sides before every show.
Yeah.
It was like dog-eared and broken and notes. She would write notes during the run. The last week of the entire show, she wanted to work on a bit with me. And I was like, let it go. You know, but that I was like, no, let's try it.
Yeah.
And then it didn't work. And then she stuck, you know, the part where she sticks her head in, she shakes her butt. I don't know if you remember. And there's like two curtain areas and she sticks her head in and talks to us while he's talking about her shaking her, her dress. That, yeah. And she would always say funny things to us when she popped her head in. That night, the last week, she popped her head and she goes, it was terrible. Cut it. Go back to the way we did it before. And I was like,
hilarious. She's giving notes on
stage. Oh yeah. I love her.
Yeah. Well, that brings me to I just want you to tell me a little bit about your Tony Award experience.
Oh.
Here you are, a Tony Award winner.
Yeah.
Does it change your life? I'm thinking of getting one.
You should get one.
I think I might.
I think you will.
What is it?
I don't think you won't.
That's so nice. You know, I have to be on Broadway, but we're working on it.
I think you will.
No, thank you, Gavin Creel. Was it everything you dreamed? And how has it changed you, if at all?
I have a paperweight that spins. That's what really changed.
I could use one.
Yeah, yeah. It would look really good right there.
Would you bring it?
Yeah, yeah, okay. I'll get it for you. But truly, it doesn't, my phone didn't ring more.
Yeah.
Nothing, like people said, oh, is it different? I was like, no, it's really not.
Yeah.
I think I won a Tony Award when I was 41, 42. I think it's different when you win a Tony Award when you're 23.
Right.
Yeah.
Do you think you would have been a nightmare had you won one at 21, 22? I don't know if you ever went through a phase like that.
Oh,
you
seem sure pretty I grounded. I think I am pretty grounded, but I think it's harder when you're younger. You get that kind of success when you're younger. You can't help but, I couldn't help but think it's just going to ascend and ascend and ascend. The only truth to it is there's a top of every ladder. Like, okay, let's say you ascend to the top. There's nowhere to go but back down and then climb back up and then realize it's not a ladder. It's a lily pond, I always say. It's just a bunch of, every once in a while you hop to a new lily pad and all the frogs go, oh. But then they go on because they got their own shit to worry about.
Exactly.
You know?
I didn't have any success till I was like 34, 35 at all.
The opposite more, of success. Don't you?
I guess I do. But part of me wishes like, oh, I wish I were like an fucking asshole 22-year-old with a little something, you know, that I could, but I probably would have been.
You appreciate it more.
I guess
30s.
You do.
I think so. Andrew Reynolds.
Yeah.
Said it was hard because we all knew he was phenomenally talented. I mean, I lived next door to him for 5.5 years and we literally shared a wall. It's like one of my friends and all of us who were friends with him were having certain amounts of success in different areas.
Yeah.
We're looking at him going, well, it's just a matter of time. And then of course he became a huge star and he said, I'm so grateful that it didn't happen when I was younger.
Yeah.
Because for me, it kind of happened sort of quickly on Broadway because it was what I wanted. And then all of a sudden, my first Broadway show, I'm playing the male lead and I'm nominated for an award. And I blew my knee out in previews and had surgery. Like everything happened at once.
Yeah.
And I had like anxiety. It was a lot. But I don't know. Then I went into my mid-30s and went, oh, you got to figure out how to get happy with yourself because this shit doesn't love you back.
Right.
It's like no Tony Award, nothing's going to love you back, you know?
Well, to put it into perspective, talking about Andrew Reynolds waiting for success when he was Link Larkin.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
In Hairspray.
Yeah.
I was the receptionist at the Broadway production office for Hairspray. So I really had no success.
Was
if
it
you
Ellen
want to talk about
Ellen Wasser?
That was Richard Frankel Productions, Richard Frankel, now yes. Frankel Green, I believe.
Yes.
So I was answering phones and making coffee when he was at least on a Broadway stage.
Yes.
So calm down, Andrew. well, I just have to ask you a little bit about I'd be remiss not to mention politics in some way. I know you're known certainly in the community for your activism.
I feel self-conscious about that because I was never a political person. If I'm honest, I have a real bad taste in my mouth about politics. I'm sort of like, I'm trying to find ways that I can be effective in the world that don't involve politics. For me, when people say I was an activist, Cleve Jones is an activist. David Mixner is an activist. Harvey Milk was an activist. You know, I wanted to know how I could be effective at a time when we were trying to mobilize our theater community around marriage equality. And I had a few friends who I met along the way who were also interested. And with the little bit of celebrity that we had, which was not much, Rory O'Malley was about to get nominated for Tony and originate that role in Book of Mormon. And our friend Jenny Canellos, my friend Scott Duquette is the guy, my friend who I first originally, and they introduced me to Jenny and Rory, and Jenny and Rory and I went on and made Broadway Impact. But it was just a one issue thing. It was like, I feel ineffective. I want to do something. I don't know what to do, and I don't know how government works. Mm-hmm. So let me make some videos that explain what a bicameral system is in the House of Representatives and the Senate and the state legislature of New York State. Right. You know, it's boring stuff that nobody wants to learn about.
Right.
So we tried to do it in sexy ways. It's Tony night, everybody. Do you also know that, you know, Malcolm Smith is your Senate Majority Leader and you can write him a letter on this? You know,
yeah.
Trying to make it fun.
That's very effective, though.
I think so. Our slogan that I thought up in a dog park was action equals equality. And I still believe that, like, if you want fill in equality with women's rights, with gun legislation, with whatever, action equals whatever you want to take action in it. I don't want to take action in politics.
Right.
But I do want to take action with my union, for example, which I guess you could call politics. I'm trying to get more involved with actors' equity and learn how I can be and stop complaining and do so, but take action.
Yeah.
And just pick one thing. Don't try to fix it all, you know?
Yeah.
So I like to think about, you know, right now I'm trying to figure out how to be more involved with the union, like learn what I can do and how I can put myself, be of service to my fellow actors.
That's great. I think that's great advice for anyone looking to just do something.
Just do one. Because yeah. It's so easy to, the climate and politics and oh God, this is nonsense of what happened with Roe v. Wade. And it's easy because that gets you into a pile of anxiety that leads you to inaction.
Exactly right. No, I know. I feel that sort of self-consciousness about politics too. I, of course, cover political issues. And sometimes people, I think, expect me to know, you know, about government and everything. Again, I feel inadequate sometimes in that department, but I'm doing what I can do. I'm acknowledging it. I'm contributing my opinion, some levity, you know, in some way or another.
What you do is imperative. It's however you get me there.
Right.
Like, but bring me to the issue.
And like you were saying, by sexying it up a little bit and you know, for people who are interested in theater and want to know more about politics, that's a very valuable thing, I think.
Yeah.
So, yeah, just
I think what you do and also how you take hypocrisy to task, Randy, is really admirable.
So nice.
Yeah.
I don't know what I'm doing. I just have an opinion and I'm trying to be creative about it. And I think it just speaks to the power of musical theater, which I don't have to tell you about, that really reaches people.
And your authenticity. Again, it comes back to like, musical theater is how you speak authentically.
Yeah.
You love it.
It's my love.
Yeah. And therefore, when it's your passion, it runs right to the front of
that's
the line.
That's right.
We're like, I want to warm my hands on that fire. I don't know anything about Mitch McConnell or what Trump said last week or the nonsense that's going on. But I love Randy and I love Patti LuPone and I'm going to look that up.
Yeah.
I always said Book of Mormon did more for Sudan and the genocide and the what's going on in Africa. Then, like what George Clooney was trying to get people to pay attention to what's going on over and over and over again. And I think if you look for the message within Book of Mormon and you can see like there's a real, I think, a wit to showing how horrifying the atrocities are in Africa through mayhem and nonsense.
Yeah.
And satire.
Right.
The show has its complications. I know I was inside of it and I've watched it and stuff, but I really have seen the writers and their efforts to try to bring through humor and satire the issue to your brain.
Yeah.
And religion, even larger, like the hypocrisy of religion and, you know, no, don't get me started with that. We'll be here all night.
Yeah. Well, I could talk to you for 100 hours.
I just love this.
You're terrific.
It's a dream. Total dream.
Oh, thanks. Likewise. We have a little trivia game. Would you like to play it?
Is it in there? Is it in the dinosaur egg?
Oh, no. These are... Should I do this?
Yeah, do a final question.
See, we're trying out all our tricks.
Let's do them all.
Let's see. This is a final question, and they just... I don't even know what they say, but I'm just going to pull one out and see what trouble we get into.
Okay.
Gavin.
Okay.
If you were lost in the woods, which of your... See? Which of your Into the Woods castmates would you want with you?
I love all of them. This is not favorite, well, but it's Stephanie.
Don't be diplomatic.
At the moment, like, it would be Stephanie Block.
Yeah.
Not necessarily the baker's wife, because Stephanie and I have forged a deep, obsessive passion for Doritos. And I do believe that she would have hidden a bag of Doritos somewhere on her person. And at some point, we would just sit down and house that bag.
This is very smart thinking. Yes. Good for you.
Yeah.
Survival skills.
Yes.
Yeah. I'm here for it. Okay, Rebecca, what do we got trivia?
Okay.
Is there a theme? What is it? What's happening?
There is.
Okay.
This is rapid fire trivia.
Both of us, we're both playing.
Yeah.
Yes.
Oh, the we're category. Competing.
Uh-oh.
The category today is Broadway.
Okay, Broadway.
Yes.
I'm going to lose. Get five questions.
Okay.
Randy, you're up first. So all five to Randy first and then all five to
all right,
Randy.
Here we go.
If he gets it wrong, do I get to try to answer for extra points?
Yes.
Okay, perfect.
Calm down, Gavin. It's just a game.
In the musical Into the Woods, how many people are eaten by the wolf?
Two.
Correct.
Two. Yes.
Question number two. At the 2009 Tony Awards, Gavin Creel sang the title song for which revival of a Broadway musical?
Hair.
No.
Yes.
Come on. These are easy, Gavin. I feel guilty. These are so easy. Go.
Question number three. Which 2002 musical features a song called What Do I Need With Love, sung by character Jimmy Smith?
Little Shop of Horrors.
No, it's Thoroughly Modern Millie.
Yes. Question number four.
I love that song.
Four.
God, you're so good.
Oh, bless you.
Which musical's title literally translates to The Cage of Crazy Women?
La Cage à Folle.
Yes. Question number five.
That's, well, I'm French. Go.
Which musical features real-life enemies falling in love as pen pals?
Oh, shit. I don't think I know this. Ugh, I have
care
to pass.
Take a guess.
Wait. Real-life enemies falling in love as pen pals.
Yes.
Want me to give you a hint?
Well, can he?
Yes.
Go ahead.
Vanilla Ice Cream.
She Loves Me.
Hey.
Okay, you get a little halfsie on that one.
Have
okay, great. That is
that's
four
the one
and
that
and half.
I'm not so familiar with. She Loves Me.
Yeah.
Four and a half, correct.
You ever see You've Got Mail?
Yeah, that's what it is.
Pen pals. Yeah. Okay, I'm ready.
Great. So, all right.
I assume this will all be Randy Rainbow trivia.
Oh, God.
All about my career.
I guess we'll okay. see. Question number one.
Broadway.
In the musical, The Book of Mormon, what is the name of the general?
General Buttfucking Naked.
Yes, correct. Question number two. Who wrote the music for the Broadway show Waitress?
Sarah Bareilles.
Yes, that is correct.
Thank you.
Question number three. Which member of the original Broadway production of La Cage aux Folles was also an original cast member of Into the Woods?
Wait a minute. The original Broadway original cast member of La Cage aux Folles was also an original cast member of...
I don't even know this one.
...of Into the Woods?
Wait a minute. This is a good one now.
This
Rebecca.
Is a
I
really
like
good one.
Is it a man? It's a woman.
Okay. It wouldn't be Kim... No, it wouldn't be Cinderella. It wouldn't be...
She played Cinderella's mother.
Oh.
She was the granny. I didn't... What is her name?
Oh, God, I don't even know. This is like...
That's a really
wait a minute.
One.
I feel like I do. Hang on. When you say it, I'll know it. And forget about booking her on this show because now we've offended her.
I'm going to give the answer.
Go ahead.
Please.
Her name is Merle Louise.
Louise. I knew that.
Oh, sugar.
Merle Louise is the correct
that's
answer.
That's a good
we
thing.
We love you, Merle. Please be a guest on the Randy Rainbow.
That's a good thing to know for myself. I didn't realize that.
Merle
I'm
going to
tell you a piece of trivia that you're going to love.
Oh, go.
Did you know that the year... that Hello Dolly was on Broadway was the same year that She Loves Me was on Broadway original. And Charles Nelson Reilly, who played Cornelius Hackle, lost the Tony to Jack Cassidy, who played Stephen Kodai.
Oh, wow.
And I did Stephen Kodai in 2016, and I did the Charles Nelson Reilly part in 2017. Somebody told me that at the stage door.
That's so weird.
Yeah, crazy.
So cosmically interesting.
Cosmic.
Question number four.
Go ahead.
How old is Cornelius Hackle in Hello, Dolly?
Okay, this is a trick question. Because in our version, he was 33, but in the book, he's 28. 28
and three quarters.
28 and three quarters, yeah. In our version, he was 33 because I was 41 and Bette was
70. Were you offended by that revision?
They were like, I'm just going to age you up here a little bit.
Yeah, I'll give you a yes for such a comprehensive answer.
Okay, good.
I think
good.
We both get
question number five. Which mythological figure does Mary Poppins bring to life during the song Jolly Holiday?
She brings Neleus. The statue. Yes, I'm proud of that one. I can't believe I remember that. So we kind of tied because we both got four and a half.
That is definitely a tie.
What do we get?
Should we do a speed tiebreaker?
You have a show to
do.
We have
a tiebreaker question.
At some point. Yes.
Okay.
First person to answer. Answer the quickest.
Okay.
We'll get the point.
Okay, here we go.
Get your face away from the microphone. Go.
Cyndi Lauper wrote the music and lyrics for Kinky Boots. Who wrote the book?
Harvey Fierstein. You knew that. You were being nice.
I was being kind.
You were
I better
being
say
so
that
kind.
Because
congratulations,
he was just a guest.
Gavin.
Was he really?
Yeah. Oh. I love him. Do you hang out with Harvey?
I met him when he was there. But what an amazing man.
Yeah, he's fabulous. Yeah. Well, no shit. Anyway, I love and adore you even more now.
This was such a joy. I was looking forward to this all day.
Thank you, sweetheart. Me too.
And now the show is over, girl. So thanks for listening. Alive, and damn it, don't you dare forget to subscribe. I promise next week will be 10 times better than even the last. Except when it's not.
You know that he's got the goods. This guy's the real deal. I went into the woods with my friend Gavin Creel.
And that's the last word of the